Hey, business owners, welcome to This Old New Business, the podcast for taking your traditional business growth practices and adapting them to a digital, social, and global world. I'm Jeff Corhan. Welcome to This Old New Business podcast. I am your host, Jeff Corhan, and this week our guest is Jared Morris. Welcome to the show, Jared.
Hey, thank you. It's good to be here, Jeff.
It is a pleasure to have you on the show. I'm really looking forward to getting into talking about digital marketing, but let's talk a little bit about kind of where you came from and how you came to be doing the work that you do today. You're known, of course, for podcasting. You have the digital commerce, or I guess we call it the digital entrepreneur show, The assembly call, the showrunner. We could go on and on about podcasting, which I would love to do, but obviously you are also the VP of marketing for Rainmaker Digital. So give us some backstory on how your career has progressed up to what you're doing today so that we can use that and kind of dive into helping this audience with their digital marketing.
Sure. Yeah, there are many podcasts currently, and certainly, you know, 6-7 years ago, I never really would have thought that I would be in the position that I'm in now. But I feel like, I don't know, you know, and especially with people my age that I talk to, I feel like that's becoming more and more common. Had several different jobs after college, you know, studied finance and entrepreneurship in college, and then did some teaching and, you know, just kind of had a lot of experience doing a lot of different things, and ended up in Dallas working at a digital agency. We were doing SEO work and kind of social media marketing work, consulting for small businesses here in town. And at that time, I hadn't really done a whole lot of stuff online. Like, I didn't know what WordPress was. I didn't know what SEO was, actually, when I started. I just had always liked writing. And the guy who was running the company needed someone to write some press releases for him. And that's just kind of how I joined and got started and got introduced to this whole wide, wild world of online marketing and digital goods and all of that. And through that, you know, I realized if I'm going to learn this and do this, I need a little sandbox to play in. I need something to actually learn what's going on. And so I launched my first WordPress site, which was a sports blog, Midwest Sports Fans, because I'm originally from the Midwest. I grew up in Indiana. And I figured if I'm going to start a site and I'm going to, you know, learn how to optimize it and market it with social media and do all this stuff, I need it to be about something I really like creating content about. And so, always been a sports fan, just decided to do Midwest Sports Fans. That was my play at a niche. and it ended up working out pretty well. And that site actually ended up driving a lot of traffic. And my partner, who was much more tech savvy than I was, got really frustrated that it kept crashing. You know, whenever we'd get a big link and we'd get thousands of visitors, it would always crash. And so he developed a new kind of hosting stack. And to make a long story short, that eventually is what led us to Copyblogger. Because at that time, Copyblogger was looking for a hosting solution to kind of be the last piece in the Rainmaker puzzle, you know, because obviously they had done themes before and landing pages and membership and SEO and all this other stuff. And so hosting was the last piece. And that's why we then joined Copyblogger. And I came over just doing support for hosting at the time. And fortunately, you know, Brian and Sonia, you know, were willing to give me a chance to write some copy because I told them I was a writer and I liked to write. And that was kind of the background that I had. Unfortunately, they gave me an opportunity. And that's kind of led to where I am now as the VP of marketing and hosting several different podcasts. And it's been really, really fun. So it's not a road that I ever would have thought that I would have gone down. But it's interesting because when you actually, you know, when I actually kind of look back and I look back at the things that I've always really enjoyed doing, I get to do all of them now. It's just kind of in a place in a way that I never would have anticipated.
That is an interesting story. I did not realize that you came from that, but that makes perfect sense to me now because my primary site today is on Synthesis.
And very nice.
Yeah. You did the tutorials, and I'm going through those tutorials, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. You know, there are people like me that are just so terrified of breaking the site, because if you've ever been hacked, you know what that feels like. Yep. You know, you feel very vulnerable. So I followed your tutorials. I held my breath. I pushed, you know, go, and somehow it worked. but that's exactly why I did move over to synthesis, and exactly why I'm launching a new site on Rainmaker, because I don't come from a technical background. Although what's interesting about this is I did learn a lot about hosting by getting into synthesis, just like we all learn that we think we're pretty good writers, right, when we start, and then the more we start doing it, the more we realize that we have a lot to learn, but we do get better. So those are some great lessons here about just everything about digital marketing these days is you have to get your hands dirty to make it work.
You do. Well, and there's a couple of things, because it was like when I first started with WordPress, I was amazed, you know, just how much information there was and how many tutorials there were out there to learn WordPress. You know, so it's not like you had to go to school to learn this. You can just get online, start Googling whatever your question is and start learning it. And then that combined with just going out and really doing it and getting your hands dirty, you know, it gives you an opportunity to really learn it and learn it in an intimate way, which is nice, you know. And obviously for any type of business owner, you've got to weigh the time it's going to take you to invest in learning it and doing yourself versus outsourcing it. But that ability, even just to, you know, at kind of a high level, to really understand what's going on, even if you aren't actually the one that does it, is really, really valuable.
I totally agree. Well, like Sonia at CopyBlogger, I came from TypePad, and if you've ever been over there, I don't know if it's still there, but you know, it's all sort of structured and organized, and the bottom line is you can't do much with it. Yeah. So when I migrated,
I think Seth Godin still uses TypePad, doesn't he, for his blog?
He is, and he even wrote a post once that, you know what, it works. And he's Seth Godin, you know,
right?
He's got mountains of traffic, so he doesn't have to worry about being on somebody else's platform. But for normal folks like us, it does pay to be on WordPress.
Exactly. No, it definitely does.
Okay, so let's talk about what I'm told is an area of expertise for you, and that's audience engagement and customer retention. And I guess what I'm thinking of is, you know, let's go back before we move forward. You know, those of us that have run small businesses, and let's say it's a brick and mortar business and we've been running it for 10, 20, or 30 years, you know, we know how to get customers. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in business. We know how to retain customers. But in the old days, before digital, everything was pretty simple. You know, your marketplace was a kind of a territory or a geography. You were probably a local business. And then along comes this thing called digital marketing. And suddenly now we have to translate those practices that work so well for us to this new world. And, you know, I know for a fact it's confusing a lot of people. They hear about email, they hear about social media. Now we're moving into the modern website. At least that's, I believe, what CopyBlogger coined that term. But I like it, because this idea of adaptive content and so forth, I think makes or will make sense to a lot of people if they really understand how to make this adaptation. So can you kind of weigh in on that, and let's pick a starting point, and we'll kind of go into as deep of a dive as we possibly can in the short time that we have today?
Yeah. No, it's so interesting about, you know, online marketing and offline marketing, that I think a lot of times we overcomplicate what needs to happen online and forget that the fundamentals that work online when it comes to communication, when it comes to marketing, when it comes to audience engagement and retention are so similar to what works offline. It's just different tools and different mediums that we're using to get our message out there. You know, it's like, you know, and really, you know, I talked about all the different jobs that I had, you know, before I started doing what I did now. One of those jobs, which was the craziest one and certainly the most difficult one, but the one that really may have taught me the most, is I did door-to-door sales in Miami, Florida. Selling like these coupon packets, you know, like you could go to a Marlins game, you know, and get like, you know, whatever, like two, it would be like $30 and you'd get four free tickets and then a bunch of buy one, get ones. You know, you may have seen these folks running around in businesses and residential areas. And I did this for a little while. I don't even know why I did it, but I'm really glad I did, because I learned so much about it, you know, just in terms of, you know, adapting a pitch to a person, you know, listening, you know, using social proof, you know, all these different elements that when we start talking about online marketing, we use those as well. And I think that's what's really important to remember is, you know, when I'm sitting down to write an email, you know, to someone who's on my list, whether it's, you know, to the digital entrepreneur folks or whether it's to basketball fans on the assembly call, you know, I'm really sitting down and writing and communicating to one person, right? Even though there may be 3,000 people on this list or 100,000 people on this list, I'm writing it as if I am writing it to one person. And I think so often mistakes that I see when people are trying to engage an audience is they try and engage everyone in the audience all at the same time, instead of really dialing it back and thinking about their audience as a series of individual people, and that you need to engage each of those people. Now, you have a message that hopefully is adaptable to a large group of people, but you're writing it so that the person reads it and feels like you're talking directly to them. And now what's great is you can kind of go to the next level, you know, with tools like Rainmaker that allow you to do marketing automation, then you can actually start tailoring that message to individual people based on what they do and based on their actions. But I think even if you don't have that, and if there's one big step that you can take to engage people better and retain people better, it's thinking about your audience as individuals, and when you write and when you communicate, doing it as individuals. And I've in all the different markets that I've been in online, seen that help and just pay huge dividends.
Well, that has become a huge topic these days, because, you know, in the early days of social media, we kind of looked around, wondered what we should be doing, saw that people were gathering followers, did that. And I think that has kind of stuck with most businesses. And they think, you know, now I've got this massive list of people that I don't know them, they don't know me, what should I do next? So your idea of doing exactly, you know, one-to-one, I think is a massive trend that we're all seeing. I'm seeing it every time I get on Facebook. People with big lists are saying, you know, I'm going to start unchecking people. I'm segmenting my list. I'm doing these things. So that's a great analogy, because if you can believe this, that is exactly how I started my landscape business in the late 80s. I left the corporate world, was doing corporate marketing for 10 years, didn't know anything about a small business. I mean, nothing. I didn't even know about the Yellow Pages. So I started going door to door. And you're right. People would ask you questions and you would realize how stupid you sound sometimes that you don't know what the heck you're selling and you better get it better. And so that sort of trial by fire is a great way to learn. And of course, these days with websites, we have things like A/B testing, testing headlines, testing content, and, you know, kind of just putting something out there, which Copy Blogger talks a great deal about the minimum viable product. And, you know, as we talked in the pre-show, that's what I'm getting ready to do, is to put a website out there this weekend that is not even near ready. But that's okay. It's sort of the idea that you're going to tell me how I can better serve you based upon what I've given you thus far.
Well, and what's really huge about that is you're opening yourself up to an opportunity to listen. And I think this is it's a big kind of mental thing that content creators need to get to, because we think so much about putting content out there. And, oh my God, I need to schedule tweets and I need to get my blog post up for next week and I got to get this podcast up. And you do. You want to put out content. You want to put out good quality content. But sometimes we get so caught up in kind of that content wheel that we forget to step back and actually listen. So it's the same thing. You know, if you have a brick and mortar business, you know, you can't just be going up to every single person who comes into your business and just selling, selling, selling. You want to ask questions and actually listen. And sometimes you just want to stand back and watch how people move through the store and just, you know, kind of watch how they use the space and what they say, maybe what kind of conversations you overhear, because that gives you some insight into your customers. And I think having that patience and that willingness to listen, especially on something like social media, is so important, because we get so caught up in what am I going to tweet next out to this general audience. You know, if I have 10,000 followers, I want to tweet something brilliant to these 10,000 followers. But how about, you know, listening, you know, really going through the feed, looking at what people are saying, and maybe finding one, two, or five people that you can reach out to individually? Because a lot of times that connection that we can make individually, if we can really make a connection, start a conversation, you know, find that common ground with that person and maybe help them in some valuable way, that can actually be more valuable than this one tweet that we broadcast out to 10,000 people that most of them don't even see it. And the ones who do don't even really pay attention. And maybe a couple people click over because it was a link, but it kind of ends there. And I just think we, you know, the one-to-one, it's not always scalable. And sometimes it can be a little bit painstaking and it requires work and a commitment, but the value that it brings us in terms of listening and in terms of being able to connect one-to-one, that's where you get that engagement and that's where you get that retention. And it's so important. And sometimes we just have to take a step back to remind ourselves of that.
Right, right. Well, it's kind of like a, I don't know if it's marketing, but I would call it selling 101. It's like, you know, work with the people whose attention you have today. And who are they? So I'm going to go back to, we didn't call it an avatar. I know that's one name, or a buyer persona, I guess, is another name for this idea of who is that sort of archetype person. In fact, I had a big aha moment this morning. I've had my archetype for months, and he was a man in his late 30s, early 40s. But today I just realized that those people that have engaged with me thus far that know I'm getting ready to launch this product have predominantly been women. Mm-hmm. And I thought, and I've done enough marketing presentations to have an audience that is predominantly women that I thought, maybe I need to change that archetype, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. So it's like, you know, if you've got one customer, that's your archetype. If you've got two, it's kind of a blend of those two, and you just keep moving forward till you get it right.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really similar to what we teach actually in our Showrunner podcasting course, which is your audience of one. And we actually teach people when they're going through and launching their podcast, and it would be the same thing with a blog or any other type of content, you know, really define your audience of one all the way down to, you know, who is this person? What does he or she look like? You know, what is she interested in? What is she afraid of? What is she trying to do? And of course, it's just a hypothesis in the beginning. I mean, you're kind of guessing. But, you know, and then as you get more feedback, as you listen more, as you interact more with your audience, you start to hone in on it even more, just like you just talked about. But I feel like sometimes people are fearful of going down that road in the first place because they're fearful of excluding folks and they feel like they won't be casting a big enough net. But, you know, the irony there is when you cast a really wide net and you try to appeal to everybody, a lot of times you end up appealing to nobody. And it's so much better to niche down and really, really make sure that you're speaking to a specific person, you know, with specific issues that you can help them solve. And then you can kind of grow and expand it from there as opposed to going the other way. And I think too many people try and cast the big net instead of really niching down in the beginning. And then you can grow it as you go. But that's, you know, and that's a great lesson just right there from your own experience.
It is so true. I mean, I've done quite well doing what I do for the past decade in digital marketing, but by focusing in on an industry which people have been telling me to do for years and years, and I don't know when I had the aha moment, but sometime in the last year or so, I said, you know, this is what I need to be doing, because sure, some people can go wide and succeed, but they are few in number. So if you want to improve mm-hmm. your odds, and you know, because what's marketing all about? It's about standing out, and there's no way to stand out if you're just trying to be appealing to everybody. And, you know, you hear this from so many people. Like, I'm not a big follower of Gary Vaynerchuk, but even on a recent podcast, it may have been on one of the Rainmaker FM podcasts, he was talking about, you know, people think I'm intentionally edgy and I'm intentionally this, that, and the other. He says, no, he says, I was playing in the middle of the road at the beginning, getting no response. But when I said, you know, why don't I just be myself, which happens to be, you know, what you get from him. And he said, mm-hmm. it really started working. And I think it's that simple. We all have to figure out who that person is that, you know, we're not kind of putting on so many layers of protection, that we're really putting the real deal out there, because that is what's going to resonate with people.
You do. And it's naturally to be fearful of doing that. And, you know, look, I mean, I experienced this myself. You know, like I mentioned the site that I had, Midwest Sports Fans, and that was kind of an attempt at a niche, but it didn't really go far enough, because it was like an arbitrary niche, right? I was like, okay, we're going to talk about sports teams from the Midwest, which was, number one, that's kind of a nebulous term. Like, people still, you know, debate what is the Midwest and what isn't. And, you know, so it kind of worked, but it didn't really work. Now, when I decided to go, when I realized, okay, Indiana basketball is my number one. It's what I love. I'm really going to focus on this Indiana basketball niche. And not only that, but I'm even going to niche down further than that. And we're going to make sure that we are a positive show that doesn't, you know, get down in the muck and the gutter of a lot of sports talk show, you know, sports blogs and sports talk shows and focus on the negative and always call the guys out. We're going to keep things positive, you know, because we're alumni of this school and those are the people we want to attract. So, and it was kind of scary because it's like, man, this is a real small audience within a smaller audience. But a funny thing has happened, which is that we've, you know, developed this really, really tight-knit fan base of folks that may be smaller in overall numbers from a traffic perspective than we would have had at Midwest Sports Fans. But in terms of engagement, it is huge. And in terms of people who actually support the show with donations and share it and the growth, it's been unbelievable. And that's a big reason why. It's the same thing with the showrunner. You know, there are lots of other podcasts out there about podcasting. And we had to be very deliberate about, okay, which, you know, how are we going to fit into this? And we realized, you know, we're not big tech guys. Like, there's a lot of podcasts about podcasts that geek out about microphones and mixers and audio quality and all this stuff. And Johnny and I are like, we don't really care about that. Like, we want the audio to be good enough, and we're going to get that minimum level of quality. But let's talk about interviews, and let's talk about audience engagement, and let's talk about turning your podcast into a course and having a bigger idea and creating an experience, you know, more the content angle of it. And so we repelled some people who really want the audio stuff and the technical stuff, but that's okay. They're not our people. And that scared me so much in the beginning, and only now through seeing it work and seeing how you can really get that increased level of engagement and retention is it something that I've truly internalized. You know, and now sometimes I almost have to catch myself and go back the other way. It's like, okay, I don't need to niche down quite that far. Like, I can't actually be talking to more than one person, you know. So it's but it works out so much better that way than the alternative.
Yes, I would totally agree. I do love both of those shows you mentioned. In fact, a side note, you know, when I first heard about Assembly Call, I mentioned it to my daughter, who is a graduate from Indiana.
And oh, is she?
Absolutely, yes. Probably about 5 years ago. She was there during the Oladipo and Zeller days, which was
very nice.
Some great times, yes.
Yes.
She said, of course I've heard of it. I know Assembly Call. And I was like, oh, God, I thought I just uncovered this gold nugget of, you know, something. But, you know,
wow, how cool.
It speaks to her. It speaks to all of those graduates. You know for a fact that this is for you. It's Indiana basketball. I mean, what's not to understand about that?
Yeah, exactly. And it's Indiana basketball that celebrates the tradition. You know, that's the thing, is we wanted our audience to be folks who weren't just interested in the basketball and understanding more about that particular game, but who cared about putting a team and a season into context, because you have hosts that actually get it and understand and kind of celebrate that tradition. And that's where, you know, you have a niche and you can even niche down even further to really tighten that engagement and that retention. And, you know, you'll have people who are at different levels of engagement with you, obviously. But what you really want are those fervent fans that will share it, that will support you, that show up all the time. And you're always going to have your drive-by folks, and they're great, and they drive download numbers and kind of the vanity metrics. But the people who will drive a business and who will, you know, share you and so that you, you know, really spread with the kind of people that you want to spread with, you know, you got to niche down to really get to those people. Because if you don't, you're not going to be speaking in a way that, like you said earlier, that's going to stand out enough to get the attention and then to really get that level of engagement. So it's so important. And a lot of that has to end up coming back to you, because you can only fake it for so long and you'll eventually be sniffed out. So you can't choose a niche and then say, well, I want to go in here, but not have any type of genuine enthusiasm for that niche either. And that's important to remember.
I completely agree. You know, I think I got this idea, the nugget of the idea, from Seth Godin, but he was talking about souvenirs. And the concept, either how he presented it or how I understood it, was that, you know, when you really build loyalty, when people really feel like, you know, you understand them, there's no limit to how much more they want of what you can give to them. And when I look back to my landscape business that I had for 20 years, honestly, I mean, these were affluent homeowners, many of them. A $100,000 upgrade on their landscape, in my mind, was a souvenir. They didn't need it. everything they had was working great, but they just felt, you know, it's just part of the process of just having fun, you know, doing more of what you want to do. And so whether that's learning about content marketing or learning the nuances of podcasting or getting more out of Indiana basketball, you know, I just think that's how we're wired.
Yeah, well, and people, you know, people want to belong too. And that's the other thing when it comes to being online, you know, and creating that kind of engagement and retention is, you know, you will do it with your content and the products that you produce, but you'll also do it with the community and the tribe that you create as well. And that's so important because if you're, you know, if you're trying to reach a certain group, a certain niche, but everybody that you're attracting is not that type of person, then the people that you want are going to look at you and say, no, 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 this isn't for me. You know, if everybody who, you know, if all the questions that we got for the showrunner and, you know, everybody who, you know, tweeted us and that was kind of visibly part of our community and that showed up at our free public sessions was just talking, just wanting to geek out on microphones, well, the people who really care just about the experience part and the content part, they would see that and be like, okay, this isn't the spot for me. Or if we're, you know, just constantly calling out the coach for IU and calling him a bum and criticizing the players, you know, people are going to show up and be like, wait a minute, this isn't for me. And so it's so important. And that's where, you know, it's difficult sometimes because you want to compromise, but you can't compromise the real core elements of what you stand for and who, what you're trying to be, because that is what you will target. That's what you will attract. And if it's not what you're going to attract, not only will you attract what you don't want, you will repel the people that you want. And you've got to get that in reverse. You want to attract the people that you want because it's so clear what you stand for and they know exactly what this experience is going to be. And they can declare with confidence, I am part of this. And then that the reverse is true, that people who aren't part of what you stand for can look at you and clearly see that and say, uh-uh, I'm going somewhere else. And that keeps, you know, the group that you're creating pure and what you want it to be.
Sure, sure. So what I'm hearing from you is this idea of community. I'm trying to bring this whole conversation home for the listeners. And I'll let you weigh in any way you would like, but I've heard it called the logged-in experience. A member community resonates with other people, but it's the idea that, okay, I'm trying to do this online. You know, I'm trying to really, you know, take care of that tribe, and I'm trying to do that with my website and the, you know, the channels that lead in and out of it. Can, whether you want to use Rainmaker or just membership sites in general or the logged in experience, give us a sense of where people want to be going, moving forward with their websites these days.
Yeah, I mean, I think the huge benefit of the logged in experience and why it's such an essential part of the modern marketing website is because, you know, I mentioned earlier about the importance of treating your audience members as individuals. And, you know, you can certainly do that, you know, sitting there writing an email, you know, kind of pretending that you're writing to one people, even though you're writing to 10,000. With a logged in experience and the right tools, you know, included in there, you can actually treat people like they are individual folks because you can set up different content to hit them at different times based on what they do. And so, you know, for instance, you know, I did something really simple with the assembly call where people, you know, we have both a halftime show and a postgame show. And so when people would come to our halftime show, which you had to log in to be a part of, once they came for the second time, I had just a little auto message that sent to them that thanked them for coming and checking out the halftime show and just asked them how they liked it, what they might improve on. It's just a real simple, you know, little email. Same thing with the postgame show. When people had visited that page 10 times, you know, I reached out and thanked them for being one of our core audience members that, you know, that really made the show go, because without them, there would be no show. And there is really no limit to what you can do from a marketing automation standpoint, which is all about giving the right piece of content to the right person at the right time. And, you know, we really think of that in a way as, you know, when you talk about, you know, selling products and doing sales online, is allowing content to be your sales force. And you can't do that if it's the same content for everybody, because you're not going to reach people at the right time when they have a question. But if someone, you know, clicks on X link in an email and it's a link talking about, you know, going to set up their theme, well, I know that they're interested in design. So I can now send that person a another message or present another piece of content to them that talks about the five things that you need to think about when you're creating the design for your theme. And so when you have a logged in experience, it really allows you to treat people as individuals. And then you can give people a place to congregate. Because now when someone feels engaged and when they feel locked in and when they really feel like you know them and understand them, not only are they going to be more likely to do business with you, they're going to be more likely to hang around. Because we all want to feel like we're in a place where we're understood. It's like the Cheers theme song, you know, where everybody knows our name. And we all want to be there. And that could be participating in a chat at a basketball website. It could be participating in a Facebook discussion group with the podcast that you listen to. It could be any number of things. And so when you can present those two elements to an audience, the marketing automation that gives them the right piece of content at the right time and a community where they really feel a part of it, well, now you start to build something really special and you start to build a place that people are going to be and want to spend more time at. And obviously all of those things then are going to help you develop the know, like, and trust factors that allow you to do more business. So both of those things together are huge. And in, you know, the present day where there are so many distractions and so many different options for where people can go, when you can really lock people in like that and become a place they want to go and that they choose to go and that they miss when they're not there, well, now you've created something really special.
Right, right. Okay, so let me see if I can bring this together for the non-technical folks like me. Going back to your analogy at the beginning, you're going door to door, you've got a product that you're selling, you're reading people's facial expressions, you're looking at how they're dressed, you're making assumptions and you're adapting your conversation based upon that. Now, moving into the website that you were just talking about, or at least within Rainmaker, since I understand it, you're using... You're setting triggers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then an action. So you're just clicking. You're setting up two simple things. You're clicking on two different things. A trigger, which triggers an action. If somebody, let's say, clicks on something. So you mentioned if they've been on a certain page, an assembly call 10 times, well, then you can give them a gift. You can send them an email. You can, you know, make a note that this is an engaged member of the community. And
yeah,
so
put them on a different list. Yeah. It's really simple. You know, you just say, okay, like you said, triggers and actions. So someone does this, and let's do this. And maybe that's, okay, they registered for this webinar, so we're going to send them to this thank you page. And when they reach the thank you page, they go on this email list, which now starts sending an autoresponder. So maybe it's a webinar to teach someone how to develop their first online course. They register, they go to the thank you page, boom, and that triggers this action of now this new autoresponder that sends them a free email course about online courses to help get them prepped for the webinar. So, you know, they've indicated, hey, I'm interested in online courses. Great, let's give you some more information. And then maybe based on what they do in there, then you may be able to take them to the next step, you know, to where it's like, okay, here is, you know, now here's a three-step course for how to actually create a free email course and what to do with that. So you can just keep, you know, taking them along these different paths based on the actions that they take. And it's very similar to a sales pitch in real life, as you were talking about, where, you know, I may have a, you know, when I was at the doors, you know, I may have had a certain pitch I wanted to go through, but as soon as someone asks me a question, that pitch is out the door. Because now it's, okay, I've got to answer your question, and let's see where that leads next. You know, you've now given me insight. You've given me a clue as the prospective customer into what you're truly interested in. Let me zero in on that. And that's, you know, that is doing this with marketing automation is the online analogy to doing that in real life.
Right, right. And I think some people like me, because I tend to resist logging in. This happened to me today. I found an article on Inc.com, and it asked me to log in if I wanted to read it, and I did. But for the listeners, you know, what they're doing now is understanding the content that I came there to get, and then hopefully serving up similar content that's related to that. So you might want to think about this every time you're on Facebook, every time you're on Amazon, anytime you're on most platforms, which is the future, really, is you're going to be logging into these platforms because they want to understand who you are better so that they can give you a better experience. And that's really where we're going, which I think is just going to be really powerful for businesses, large and small.
Well, and here's what's so important to remember. You know, the reason why people are skeptical, why people are reluctant to log in or give information is a lot of times we fear, oh crap, I'm just going to get email after email in my inbox now. They're going to sell me stuff. It's going to be really annoying. And that's why it's so important to not think of, you know, marketing automation, all this stuff as about selling. You know, if you're really focused on audience engagement, you're focused on retention, it's got to be about helping. But if you help people and if you're truly helping people, well, when it then reaches the point where you're ready to do business with them, they will, and it won't feel like you're beating them over the head selling to them. But I think this is where some companies get a little bit into trouble and almost get overzealous with marketing automation. It's like, oh my God, there's so many opportunities to sell, but we really need to think of it more as opportunities to help, because I think that comes across. And you want your audience to think of you as someone who is there to help, not there to sell. Because once you tip over into that, they're thinking of you as just there to sell. Well, now they're not going to be very receptive to your messages. You may get an unsubscribe, and then you've lost that person forever. So always think of it in terms of, how can I help? What can I do? Really try and listen and empathize with your audience, and that will help you do that.
Absolutely. Well, that's a great note to kind of wind down on. So I will let you close things out however you wish, if you have any closing comments, and certainly, of course, to let the listeners know how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, the two best ways to get in touch with me, you can reach out on Twitter at Jared Morris, JerodMorris, or just email me, jared@copyblogger.com. I love engaging with folks one-on-one, even in email. It's one of those things that doesn't scale, but it really creates impact. And that's a lesson that I learned from Johnny Nassar, my co-host on The Showrunner, you know, which is that sometimes you do need to do the things that don't scale right now so that you can scale in the future. Because if I can make a good, if you and I can make a connection via email and I help you in some way and you help me and there's reciprocation there, well, you may be more likely to recommend me to someone close to you in the future and vice versa. And that recommendation is going to mean a lot more than if someone just stumbles upon me via a Google search or something else like that. And I've always tried to be mindful of that. And I've just seen so much success with audiences growing that way in a really meaningful way. So that would be my final thought. And those are the best ways to contact me as well.
Outstanding. Well, thanks again for taking the time, Jared. We really appreciate it.
Sure. No, it was great, Jeff. I appreciate the opportunity.
That's all for this episode. Thanks so much for listening. You'll find the wrap-up and links to all of the resources mentioned in the show notes at thisoldnewbusiness.com. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and subscribe, and we'll really appreciate it if you write a review, because those downloads and positive reviews tell iTunes this is a show worth listening to. We appreciate your attention today and look forward to you joining us again to learn what's new for business.